Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading a new book called Kitty Cornered, How Franny and Five Other Incorrigible Cats Seized Control of Our House and Made It Their Home, by author Bob Tart. And if we have some time, I'll be reading some news articles and letters about the animals in our lives. Our first reading today is by Bob Tart, and the book is called Kitty Cornered. And I'm going to read you the cast of characters before we get started on the story. Agnes, our original cat, who wanders where all the others came from, a.k.a. Aggly Waggly. Franny, nervous white and black stray, who insists on being petted when she eats, also known as Alfalfa Girl, Ferret Face, Francine, the Little Kitty, Miss Pinky Winky, Nose, Sunday School Girl, Feline Trotsky. Then there's Lucy, snapping crocodile disguised as diluted tabby with a disdain for litter box geometry, also known as Fatsy Pats, and Lucy Caboosey. Maynard, the portly tabby on a nonstop whaling expedition, came to us as Mabel, also known as Mr. Cuddlewuddle, Rand McNally, Harold the Barrel, and Face. Then there's Mooby. He's an aging Snow White cat who sleeps more than Snow White. He came in to us as Moonbeam, also known as I Want, Conehead. And Tina, thorn in Fanny's side, with a periscope tail, also known as Teeny Weeny, Periscope Girl, Tina Louise, Sis, Lump-a-Bump, and Puppet Mouth. Some strange names for kitties, don't you think? Okay, and here's the introduction. I had my first encounter with a cat when I was 2.5 years old. It didn't turn out well. My mom had carried me next door so that she could get a closer look at our neighbor's climbing roses and still keep an eye on me. While she talked to Mrs. Farron, I busied myself by poking an anthill with a twig. Then I noticed Farron's black cat, Fluffy, rolling in the sun on the porch. Before anyone could stop me, I lurched over and rubbed Fluffy's stomach. I enjoyed her promised fulfillment of a fraction of a second before a set of claws raked my arm. My howling ended that visit. The incident didn't sour me on cats, though. It only made me wary of Fluffy. I was too young to develop prejudices yet, but that wasn't true of my parents, who held an unexplained grudge against cats. They had no problem with dogs, especially our family beagle, Muffin. He seldom stirred except to bury her head in the bowl. Cats, in contrast, were devious creatures, according to my mother. You can't trust a cat, she would say. She repeated this for years. My dad backed her up. Finally, I asked him what was so bad about cats, and he told me they can jump on you, scratch you while you're sleeping. This was as close to sprouting superstition as my common sense father ever came. But I believed him at that time. I was in second grade by then and should have known better, but none of my friends had cats, or if they did, the cats were smart enough to keep out of sight when I showed up. So when I'd see a cat skittering across the street, I never thought of anyone as a companion. I thought of it as a wild creature like a squirrel or a pigeon, a nuisance animal, in fact. This all changed when I was in high school, and my older sister Joan brought home a gray mass of matted fur for a riding lesson. I named her Regal, and I'll keep her in my room, she told my parents. Absolutely not, my mom said. You're not keeping a cat in this house. What your mother says goes, said my dad. Joan bought Regal a litter box, set it up in the corner near her closet. She wasn't particularly rebellious, but her will to rescue a needy barn cat was stronger than my mother's will to keep the cat out of the house. I sided with them against her, as I usually liked to do, but this time I really believed that she was wrong. Taking in Regal was a betrayal of family policy, especially from our aging beagle Muffin's point of view. We were in for a surprise, however. Regal turned out to be a shy and gentle soul who had zero disruptive impact on our lives. About the only time I knew that she was there was when I slipped into Joan's room to visit her. Regal was so sweet and undemanding that I ended up exchanging one false notion about cats for another. Instead of sharing my parents' belief that cats were trouble, I decided that they were hardly anything at all, just purring plush toys that wanted to be petted. Even Muffin seemed more intriguing. It never occurred to me that the only person who was duller than a sleeping dog would make such a mistake about a cat. I simply hadn't spent enough time around cats yet to absorb some of their smarts, or to know that each cat was different, and that some were considerably wilder and more unpredictable than others. When Joan married Jack a few years later, Regal joined Evenstar and Romulus in a three-cat household. When they took in a fourth cat named Tigger, I grew deeply concerned that Joan was suffering the dreadful fate of turning into a cat woman. She and Jack had two dogs, too, but while owning a couple of dogs seemed normal to me, four cats, that struck me as a borderline crazy. I figured that you might as well just move out into a hollow log as live in a house where there were twice as many cats as people. What was the point of four walls and a roof when nature had already taken over? A decade and some years later, my thinking began to change after I married animal lover Linda. Under my nose at first, and then with my approval, our house filled with all the manner of birds. For our Christmas time, she surprised me, to put it mildly, with a gray kitten that we named Penny. Before we knew it, stray cat Agnes needed a home. Mooby came next, and her arrival sent me to the store up the street for another litter box. When I complained about my fate to the cashier, she said, "Three of them? You must be a cat person." "Not me," I told her, as she had accused me of running a meth lab. By then I had long since recovered from my early misconception that cats were either devious creatures or as mellow as stuffed toys. They were both and much more. In fact, they were as complicated as any person that I'd ever met, and more intelligent than most people, too. But I refused to think of myself as a cat person. That was going a step too far. I readily called myself a bird person because the term was so amorphous that it didn't pigeonhole me. A bird person could be anyone from an egg-headed aviculturist who specialized in rare parrots to a redneck with a backyard chicken and a flock. But the term cat person was pretty specific, suggesting a tame, middle-aged eccentric who substituted interaction with pets for a healthy social relationship with other people. I resented the whole notion because it described me perfectly. I was able to console myself with the fact that the defining trait of a true cat person was living in an environment that was overrun by cats. We had only three, and the only reason that we had that many was due to a unique set of circumstances that descended upon us like a dark cloud and could never occur again. At least that's what I told myself, a few years before we ended up with six cats in our tiny house, including a wild child from the woods. Perhaps I have learned my lesson from Fluffy, and perhaps I should have listened to Mom and Dad, but I listened to my heart instead, and that always led to trouble. From the introduction, we move on to Chapter 1, The Wisp of the Woods. Linda burst into the house in her usual doorknob-through-plaster fashion shortly after I had finished feeding Agnes. The floor bounced like a drumhead as she stomped the snow off of her boots. Peering around the corner from the kitchen, I felt grateful that I wasn't still climbing the basement stairs, or the tremors might have pitched me off where an underfoot Agnes had failed. Linda tossed her boots onto the porch and then shucked off the pair of plastic bread bags that provided the waterproofing her thrift store boots lacked. "I saw that white and black cat again," she told me with a mixture of excitement and disbelief of a child glimpsing Santa Claus. "She was on the edge of the woods, kitty corner from the trailer park, but closer to us than when I saw her the last time. I went to the store today, and I better not have forgotten to buy that shredded cheese again." I went back to cleaning Bella's cage as Linda chugged into the kitchen. The parrot pinched my finger with her beak when I whisked her off the countertop to save her from gently clocked by a sack of groceries. "You have to be a better girl," I said. "I couldn't see her very well through the trees," Linda said. "She was definitely after something and headed in our direction." I pictured the stray running in that oddly unhurried but determined feline fashion, erect body, stiffly trailing tail, legs flickering like the frames of a silent movie. She trotted in a straight line toward our house until the honk of a diesel horn sent her scampering off into the opposite direction. "She better not come here," I said. Bella squawked to come out of her cage and resume her battle with an ice cube on the countertop. "Shh," I told her, leaning my face close to hers. "You're giving me a headache." I loved our three cats, but I was a bird person at heart. 16 years ago, Linda had indoctrinated me into a world with an ever-increasing parade of foul creatures who now lived with us, both inside and outside. And I discovered after a long struggle that I understood birds and their mysterious otherness. The cats had slipped in under the radar while we were otherwise engaged in cleaning parakeet cages and making toys for parrots, and I'd assumed that, to comparison to birds, they were the tame ones. The ones who basically followed domestic rules. Hadn't we always learned that cats were domesticated animals, after all? I found more to laugh at than lament and naughty behavior from our birds. But I expected better manners from a fellow mammal, and not the long stretches of brooding aloofness and general lack of gratitude of our cats. I wanted them either to act more like us or to play the role of cuddly toys. But time and time again, they disappointed me on both counts. "I forgot the cheese again," Linda said after pawing through two bags. In a noble, self-sacrificing, wounded tone of voice, I volunteered to return to the store for her. But the errant cheese had become an orange badge of honor, and she resolved to retrieve it on her own. Moments later, she thundered back into the house, an envelope of Arctic cold clinging to her jacket as she kicked off her boots. Fortunately for her good mood and for the church potluck supper, she had found the cheese inside the car, skulking between the passenger seats and the door. In the kitchen, I watched her stash the cheddar in the crisper, where it was instantly swallowed up by a vegetative tide of baby carrots for Rudy the rabbit, hunks of ginger root for my tea, partially filled boxes of margarine sticks, and shriveled flatbread, an empty plastic lemon, and of course, another package of shredded cheddar cheese. As I was taking inventory of the drawer, Agnes skittered up the basement stairs to rub against my leg until she had my attention. I turned toward her and she trotted back down the stairs and stared up at me from the bottom. All I could see in the gloom peculiar to the unlit basement was an incandescent pair of sulfur yellow eyes. Even in the full fluorescent light of the indoor day, our black cat's facial features tended to merge into an inscrutable blur, especially compared to her inverse counterpart, the blindingly white moonbeam, a.k.a. Mooby. "I think she wants to go out," Linda told me. "I think she's just angling for another treat." With Agnes safely planted at the foot of the stairs and out of range of tangling up my legs, I decided to make the descent, despite the futility of it all. To convince Agnes to come inside each evening, I had initiated the habit of rewarding her with a dollop of canned cat food. This turned out to be a huge mistake. She would beg to go out, come in, go out, and come in again several times a day in the hopes of earning a spoonful of food, and darned if I wasn't weak enough to succumb to her sheer audacity. This time, though, she didn't step outside by as much as a toenail. I opened the basement door and a blast of Michigan air hit us like a frozen anvil. She pivoted, raced to her dish, and shot me her best, "You might as well feed me" look. I scooped her up into my arms, rubbing her face in an attempt to rustle out a facial expression that I could see. I squeezed her and received the bleat of a crabby sheep in response. "I just fed you 15 minutes ago," I said, putting her down next to her empty bowl, but I failed to exercise the necessary vigilance on my ascent. Just a few steps away from the kitchen landing, Agnes intervened between my foot and the stairs. I pitched forward, trying to avoid her, by my hand attempting to latch onto the non-existent railing, which I had been intending to have someone else install for years. Slamming my shoulder against the wall saved me, but I had come close to falling, that I felt the cold, clammy fingers of the cement floor reaching for the back of my skull. Oblivious to my close brush with the Reaper, Linda said, "I wouldn't be surprised if the white and black kitty shows up at our back fence." I didn't give the matter a single neuron of attention. Once or twice a year, cats materialized in our yard, only to disappear as soon as I opened the door and tried to engage them in conversation about how they needed to do something productive with their lives. These fleeting and possibly mystical creatures didn't much interest me, and a cat a mile away that I hadn't even glimpsed at was completely off my radar. Especially when we had a cat of homicidal bent literally underfoot. "It's probably not a stray," I told Linda. "It's probably living with some long-suffering family at the trailer park who didn't realize that they were getting into when they took in a cat." I directed this last remark at Agnes, who had returned to the gloom of the basement to glare up at me from her bowl. Next week, we'll continue reading about Kitty Cornered in Bob Tate's book and find out just exactly what's happening both in the basement and with the cat in the woods. Our next reading is entitled How Cats Became Internet Royalty, A Look at Viral Fame. Cats have long been adored companions to humans, but in the digital age, they've ascended to an entirely new level of fame. The internet has become a virtual kingdom for our feline friends, where they reign supreme as the ultimate stars of viral content. From grumpy faces to playful antics, the world has embraced these furry beings, and in this reading, we'll explore how cats become internet royalty, the psychology behind their fame, and how they've influenced our culture. The rise of cat culture. The phenomena of cats gaining internet fame can be traced back to the early days of social media. Websites like YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram provided a platform for cat owners to share their pets' adorable antics. One of the earliest viral cat sensations was Nyan Cat, a pixelated cat flying through space with a catchy tune. This quickie animation quickly captured the hearts of millions and set the stage for the future of feline fame. As cat videos grew in popularity, so did the concept of cat memes. These humorous images often featured a cat with a funny expression paired with witty captions. The iconic Grumpy Cat is perhaps the most recognizable example of this meme culture. The late feline, with her permanently displeased expression, became a symbol of sarcasm and attitude, earning millions of followers and even a movie deal. Cats' unique personalities and quirks translate exceptionally well into viral content, making them perfect candidates for internet stardom. Their grace, playfulness, and sometimes aloof nature resonates with viewers, leading to deep emotional connection. Did you know that cat videos can actually boost your mood? Studies have shown that watching cat videos can increase feelings of happiness and reduce stress. The psychology behind cat fame. So what is it about cats that captivate us? The answer lies in a combination of their physical attributes and behaviors. Cats are inherently cute with their big eyes, soft fur, and playful mannerism. Our brains are hardwired to find these traits appealing, triggering a release of oxytocin, the love hormone, when we interact with them. Additionally, cats embody a certain mystery and independence that intrigues us. Unlike dogs, who are often eager to please, cats maintain an air of aloofness. This enigmatic quality draws us in, makes us want to understand them better. Their unpredictable behavior, ranging from sudden bursts of energy to moments of quiet contemplation, adds an element of surprise that keeps viewers coming back for more. Moreover, the internet provides a space where people can find community and share their love for cats. Social media groups and forums dedicated to cat enthusiasts foster connection between pet owners, allowing them to bond over their shared experiences. This sense of belonging contributes to the cat's sustained popularity online. Iconic cats on the internet. As we explore the realm of viral cat fame, several iconic felines have left an indelible mark beyond Grumpy Cat. We have the likes of Lil Bub, a cat born with a unique genetic condition that made her appear perpetually kitten-like. Her charm and adorable features won over hearts worldwide, leading to numerous appearances and charitable efforts. Another internet sensation is Colonel Meow, known for his fluffy fur and grumpy demeanor. His owner capitalized on his fame by creating merchandise, and Colonel Meow even earned a Guinness World Record for the longest fur on a cat. These cats are not just pets. They become brands that inspire merchandise, books, and even charitable foundations. Cats have been shown to have a unique purring frequency that can promote healing. The sound frequency of a cat's purr is between 25 and 150 hertz, and it is believed to have therapeutic benefits for the humans, helping to reduce stress and promote healing in bones and tissue. The impact of social media. Social media has transformed the way we view and interact with cats. Platforms like Instagram have birthed cat influencers who amass thousands, if not millions, of followers. These feline personalities often have their own dedicated accounts, showcasing their daily lives, adventures, and, of course, their adorable faces. Brands have taken notice, partnering with popular cat influencers to produce ranging products from cat food to toys. This marketing strategy capitalizes on the emotional connection that followers have had with these furry stars, making it a win-win for both brands and pet owners. Additionally, the accessibility of technology means that anyone with a smartphone can capture and share their cat's antics. This democratization of content creation has led to an exploration of cat-related media, with countless viral videos flooding our feeds daily. Cats as cultural icons. The cultural impact of cats extends beyond just social media. They have become symbols in various art forms, from literature to movies. In films, cats are often portrayed as mysterious or magical creatures, further enhancing their enigmatic allure. The famous animated movie, The Aristocats, well, that one showcases the charm and elegance of felines, while The Cat in the Hat introduces them as playful, mischievous characters loved by children worldwide. Cats have even dedicated a day that's called National Cat Day. Celebrated annually on October 29th, encourages cat adoption and highlights the importance of caring for these furry companions. This day serves as a reminder of the joy of cats that they bring to our lives and the responsibility that comes with pet ownership. When choosing a cat, please consider adopting from a shelter or rescue organization. There are many loving cats in need of homes, and adopting a pet can be a rewarding experience for both you and your new furry friend. The future of cats in the digital age. As technology evolves, so does the relationship between cats and their human companions. Virtual reality and augmented reality are beginning to enter the pet world, allowing owners to interact with their cats in new and exciting ways. Imagine being able to play with your cat in a virtual environment or using augmented reality to track their behavior and health. Furthermore, as more people turn to pets for companionship, the bond between humans and cats will only continue to strengthen. The internet provides an avenue for people to share their experiences, learn from others, and celebrate the joy that comes with being a cat owner. Cats have truly become internet royalty, capturing our hearts and imaginations through their charming antics and their unique personalities. From viral videos to cultural icons, these furry creatures have made their mark in the digital age. As we continue to embrace the feline presence in our lives, let's celebrate the joy they bring and cherish the moments we share with our beloved pets. Here's to the kings and queens of the internet. May they continue to entertain and inspire us for years to come. This article, How Cats Became Internet Royalty, A Look at Viral Fame. And here's a note about how cats always land on their feet. The phenomena that allows cats to land on their feet is known as the writing reflex. This reflex begins to develop when kittens are just a few weeks old, and it matures as they grow. When a cat falls, their body instinctively engages in a series of rapid movements that help them reorient themselves in mid-air. Initially, a cat will rotate its head to face down, followed by the alignment of its spine and body. The flexible vertebrae allow them to twist and turn in ways that are impossible for humans, enabling them to right themselves quickly. The final act involves spreading their legs to increase surface area and slow their descent, which can mitigate injury upon landing. Did you know that cats have over 30 vertebrae in their spine, and that contributes to their flexibility and their agility? Their unique skeletal structure allows them to have the ability to land on their feet. Their lightweight bodies and flexible limbs allow them to absorb the impact of a fall better than most other animals. When a cat falls from a height, its body works like a parachute. The spread of the limbs increases their air resistance, allowing them to fall more slowly and land with greater control. Studies have shown that cats have a terminal velocity of around 60 miles per hour compared to human beings, who reach terminal velocity at approximately 120 miles per hour. This slower descent gives cats more time to adjust their position and prepare for landing, further enhancing their chances of survival from heights. So this is how cats can always land on their feet. Well, that concludes our readings for today. I do hope you've enjoyed them, and I invite you back again next time to hear more articles about the animals in our lives. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.